interview with Mary Rouse. It's now the 9th of August, 1988. And we're in her office. I have some questions for you, but do you... No, well, I thought to begin with, though, I'd like to ask you what you're thinking about and concerned about right now.
Okay. I have just made several hires of people. I hired a new assistant dean. I hired a person to head our efforts to expand orientation and develop a course for new students. We hired a community mental health specialist to support house fellows and handle crises and problems in residence halls. We hired a special assistant to the associate dean and myself, in fact, Jan Shepherd, who is a PhD in cultural anthropology. What every dean of students needs is a wonderful cultural anthropologist sitting at her right elbow. And so we've made some wonderful hires. The smarter and the more talented people we hire, the better we all look. And so that's been a lot of fun. We've had hundreds of applicants, literally, for our jobs. For instance, for the special assistant to me position, we had 300 applicants. Very good people. From an employer's standpoint, it's a dream because you have a wonderful pool. And from the applicant's standpoint, it's a nightmare because mm-hmm. the competition is so keen. But we've made some really good hires. And last week, we had the first retreat, a half-day retreat out at Olbrich Park that our office has ever had since I've been here, which is since 1973. And we had it was a very happy occasion of, you know, people from the different units of the Dean of Students Office coming together. We didn't require attendance, but we had nearly perfect attendance from everyone, and the kind of the sense of community, you know, that we're all in this together with a common purpose of serving students and supporting the academic mission of the university. So it was a lovely function, just absolutely lovely.
Was it a working function or just social?
No, it was working. Our purpose was to introduce our new staff and to review the general mission of the Dean of Students Office, and then get the people from the various units, for instance, from the University Counseling Service, to talk about where they intend to head, you know, in the next year. So it was sharing information. There was, you know, some time to socialize, but sharing information about our offices, and then picking out particular issues that are going to be important to us in the year ahead. For instance, alcohol and underage drinking, and how do we handle reports of underage drinkers, and, you know, mm-hmm. just what is our perspective. So we targeted certain issues as well as a general information sharing. But I guess what I want to relate, and I'm not sure it would ever come through on a piece of paper, is the feeling that we are working as a team. And I said in my remarks that I think each person in our operations has different gifts, or, you know, brings different strengths, you know, to our operations, and giving people an opportunity to share those gifts, share those strengths with us. It was lots of fun.
Do you have many people left over from former times that are weak members of the staff that interfere with what you're trying to get done?
Actually, I don't, Laura, and I think the reason I don't have that problem for the most part is that we went through this year-long planning process with, you know, the staff as a whole all last year. And so, you know, my style is participatory management, so everyone had a chance, you know, to get in there and say, you know, how they would like the office changed. And although people may not agree with everything, basically, it was a shared responsibility in terms of coming up with the the goals and the new directions for the office, the staff was ready to move here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I came along and provided some leadership and a forum for the staff to say, you know, how they would like, you know, to see our operations changed. There are few people for whom, you know, change is hard, and you know, I wouldn't report that that 100% of people on my staff are ecstatic about our directions, but I would say the majority, by far the majority of the staff are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, in addition to that, Donna Shalala's refocus on undergraduate education and the place or the standing that she gives to student services, the importance of student services in a university as large as ours has helped
carry me along.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Mm-hmm. It must have made a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
To morale.
What else am I thinking of?
Wait a sec. Excuse me. What else are you thinking about?
Well, not this past weekend, but the weekend before, Fanny LeMoyne, who chairs the Future Directions Committee for the university, invited me to participate in a conference along with her. It's called the Alliance for Undergraduate Education. Essentially, it's a group of 12 large public universities, research universities, that feel that there is something missing from the educational experience that most undergraduates have. And so they've come together. The group is about 2 years old. And we met at Wingspread. This was their summer meeting. And the kinds of things that we're talking about at Wisconsin to enhance the freshman year experience are being talked about at all these other colleges and universities. It was really nice to find out what's happening at UCLA and Penn State and Michigan. And essentially, two points are being made. One is that we need to do a better job of welcoming our new students and letting them know that, you know, we're glad that they're here and that it's a privilege to be here. And secondly, give them an opportunity to be in a class of not more than 20 or 25 students with a tenured faculty member, preferably a senior faculty member, so that in their first or second semester here, they've had an opportunity to participate in small group discussion and do some writing, learn some critical thinking skills centered around whatever topic the faculty member has expertise in. For instance, it might be Southeast Asian studies, as we were talking about, relative to one of my own children, or it might be, biochemistry or environmental studies. But the idea of, you know, a student really getting connected in a more personal way with a faculty member that first or second semester, you know, everyone in the Alliance feels that that's important. And many schools, for instance, Illinois has got a project already on the table, a cooperative project with all its schools and colleges to begin to introduce these freshman seminars. So the kinds of things that we're talking about here are being talked about at other schools, and it was very nice to exchange ideas with them.
Is that just coincidence that you're all suddenly thinking about this? Is anybody a ringleader to whom other people began to pay attention at any university?
I don't think so. I think it's almost kind of like a movement among faculty and staff. You start talking about this and people start nodding their heads and saying, you know, yes, you know, I agree with you, and we're thinking about doing this and this and this. So I think it's kind of a movement. Who actually started it, I don't know. I certainly give a great deal of credit to Ernest Boyer, whom I've talked about before,
yes,
in terms of and the work of the Carnegie Commission.
Yes, that could be enough, couldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
This idea of a course, a small course, Are you talking about a regular history course, regular biochemistry course, or something specially set up just for freshmen?
Okay, I actually have two different kinds of things in my mind since I went to the conference. One is a regular course, you know, is asking the schools and colleges and departments if they would pick out, you know, we have to do it on a pilot basis first, but pick out, you know, a senior faculty member who would be willing, perhaps on a volunteer basis, to, let's say that his specialty is in American Civil War, you know, history, that he would agree to give a freshman seminar to not more than 25 freshmen. It would be billed as, you know, here's a special opportunity for you to have a small group experience. And he would teach his specialty and at the same time come to know those students personally, have a chance to give them a chance to write, to, you know, speak out in class, to acquire what I call some critical thinking skills from the beginning. It also could be used as a recruiting device by that faculty member to get people enthused or excited about, you know, his particular area. Oftentimes our students don't have that experience until they're juniors or seniors, mm-hmm. and sometimes now they don't have that at all. And I think it's really important for students to be exposed to these faculty members and to learn, you know, how great they are and why they make this university great. They're the backbone, you know, of our institution. So that's one thing that I have in my mind. The other thing that I have in my mind, we will be piloting for the fall of 1989. And that is probably a one-credit voluntary course that would be, again, taught by volunteers. And we have a list of at least 25 faculty who have said they would like to participate. We will develop a syllabus that would introduce students to the university, to the history of the university, mm-hmm. to its traditions, to teach students how the university works, and also to introduce them to resources and services, sort of a kind of like an achievement 101 course, you know, how can you come to know the university better and get connected with it. And I would also want to include life outside the classroom in terms of encouraging that man from Harvard, Dr. Coles, talks about ethical activism, you know, getting students involved in, you know, community projects and encouraging them to learn that we're living in an international neighborhood and get them to, you know, go abroad. And so anyway, those are two very different mm-hmm. kinds of things. And you know, hopefully we'll be able to at least get the orientation, the introduction to the university to get a small pilot of 25 or 50 students off the ground next year, and then we'll work with the departments to talk about this other idea, this seminar idea.
The Oral History Project would have wonderful material for that one credit course, you know.
Yes.
I mean, it'd be just,
yes.
You could take
yes.
excerpts from people talking mm-hmm. about their student life mm-hmm. in the 20s and 30s and
yes.
60s.
And that's right. And, you know, I have in mind a rigorous course. I don't have in mind a fluffy course,
uh-huh.
you know, where there's a really hard, you know, material. And again, a fairly small course, I think, or, you know, an opportunity for students to connect with whoever is teaching the course. There, we have lots of material for the course.
We'll have I bet you do, yes.
No problem. So that's pretty exciting.
Have you discussed this with the deans of the various colleges?
We talked about the expanded orientation efforts a fair amount, and the reaction has been very favorable to the Center for New Student Development. That's what we actually call it.
Mm-hmm.
Opening that September 12th, we just hired a co- coordinator on Friday for that project. I have not talked with the deans about the specific academic freshman seminar, mm-hmm. you know, idea, but I certainly, you know, intend to. I mean, we can't make any of these projects work unless we have an integral connection with the faculty and the support of the faculty. And so the advisory board, for instance, for the Center for New Student Development, I plan to have that, what the people on that permanent advisory board will be mostly faculty. I have faculty involvement from the beginning. In fact, I did mention to Joe Kaufman, Emeritus Professor Joe Kaufman, who has been so helpful to me, I asked him whether he would consider chairing that permanent advisory board to get it off the ground for the first couple of years, since he's got so much wisdom to, you know, offer. So he's thinking it over. Mm-hmm. But it'll definitely be a faculty advisory board.
Why couldn't you just have a regular one of the academic courses that they would teach anyway, but ask them to confine the enrollment in the course and to have it for freshmen and maybe a few sophomores, instead of making it a special? You said it was going to be volunteer, that?
Well, I'm making this up as I go along.
Uh-huh.
I haven't really
fascinating
thought,
idea.
you know, thought it through, but that's not a bad idea. Maybe we could just take something that is existing and, as you say, limit enrollment to freshmen and to 25 students or something like that. That's actually a very good idea. That might save us some time.
And also then they would feel that they were in the mainstream. I mean, it was mm-hmm. one of their courses. Mm-hmm. It was just a nice small course.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's a very good idea. I think you might have just saved me a couple months of time.
That would be nice. Well, it would be interesting to hear what the deans have to say about it. Although that shouldn't interfere with anybody's programs, I shouldn't think.
The other thing, and I think you probably know this, is there are going to be some major changes. The dean of LNS, the vice chancellor for academic affairs, and the dean of the graduate school will all be retiring June 30th, 1989.
No, I didn't know that.
And so there will be some dramatic changes in the top leadership of the university. I mean, we've had some dramatic changes already, but there will be some continuing dramatic changes. In fact, there will be some search and screen committees set up for these positions early in the fall.
Huh. Goodness. It's something to contemplate, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Will that affect you, do you think?
Well, yes, it will. In that, you know, we're working as a team, and the College of Letters and Science, of course, is the largest college on campus, and the perspective of that person in terms of undergraduate education and freshman seminars is going to be terribly important. Terribly important.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly the perspective of all those individuals, although there are three vice chancellors, everybody knows that the vice chancellor for academic affairs is preeminent among the three mm-hmm. vice chancellors, and so certainly his or her leadership is going to be key. I mean, I see myself as working for the chancellor and the vice chancellors.
Mm-hmm. I knew it was happening sometime, but I hadn't realized it was so imminent.
Sorry to take you by surprise on Tuesday morning.
Anything else?
Anything else? No. Well, maybe a couple things. These are bits and pieces. We have finished the major report on children, families, and child care. The University Child Care Committee was working on that. I know we talked about that. And that report now is in the hands of the chancellor. And I will be meeting with her shortly to review the report with her. and to figure out, you know, how she intends to respond, and, you know, how we want to circulate the report. At the same time, Dr. Janet Hyde has been chairing the parental leave committee, and they're also coming in with a set of recommendations on parental leave. And so probably you will hear a lot about both those reports this fall. The other major report that the chancellor has in her hands is on alcohol and other drug abuse issues within the university community, both as those issues affect students and employees. The report was finished this spring and presented to her in May, and two people from our staff have had a very heavy hand in writing that report and working on that task force, because alcohol and other drug abuse is an issue that Paul Ginsberg was always very concerned about, and rightly so. And I have picked up that thread and feel that the number one drug of abuse on this campus is and will continue to be, you know, alcohol, and that we lose a lot of employee days and student productivity to, you know, alcohol. And so you'll be hearing a lot about that this fall too, I would guess.
Now, your role in the child care is incidental to your deanship, isn't it? Dean of Students doesn't.
No, you know, nowhere in my job description, maybe I said this on one of the other tapes, has there ever been any specific responsibility connected with children, families, and child care. It's simply that I, all my life, have felt that this issue is so important that I have picked that thread up and carried it. And although I divested myself of many of my responsibilities from my former job as assistant dean, I decided that this whole area was so important that I would continue to chair the University Child Care Committee to send out that message. So it's a, you know, everyone brings to a job certain, you know, interests. And I want everybody to know that I think this area is extremely important, so I will continue to exert as much leadership and influence, you know, as I can. I think it's interesting that in the presidential campaign this year, children and family issues are emerging as a very important issue.
Yeah.
Mr. Bush proposed a $2.2 billion bill to support child care a couple weeks ago.
So
it's becoming a national issue, and you know, I'm wondering why it's taken so long. But it's heartening to see that it is being picked up nationally.
Well, I knew you were interested to have work with your staff so that it would be possible here in the staff of the Dean of Students Office, but you have a campus-wide interest in it.
I have a campus-wide interest.
That's what I have.
A citywide, statewide,
nationwide
interest. it's with joy that I report that Donna Shalala is a board member of the Children's Defense Fund in Washington.
Uh-huh.
So we have direct ties to Marion Wright Edelman, who is the head of the Children's Defense Fund, who's doing just a marvelous job.
Again, has this been discussed with the deans at the deans' meetings?
We have not talked about children and family issues. My plan is to talk with the chancellor in the next week or two, and, you know, to develop a strategy. I think that the report is excellent. We spent a lot of time on it, and it's very thoroughly done, and the documentation is excellent. So probably the next step will be to send the report out to them. Basically, we have 20 recommendations in the report, and what we're saying is we're asking the university community to react to our recommendations and to the report.
Do you think that faculty will be affected by it, or is it largely have to do with staff?
everyone will be affected by it because there are recommendations that affect everyone, starting with trying to raise people's consciousness around issues of workplace and home. So everyone will be affected by it. There's something in there for everyone.
I see. I just wonder if the deans may not look a bit askance at this.
They may. Certainly, some of our deans will not. Hamilton McCubbin from Family Resources and Consumer Sciences understands these issues and feels as strongly and passionately about them as I do. Jim Hickman in the School of Business has told me on several occasions that there isn't anything that's more important for our society right now than the family and doing everything we can to support families. So I know there'll be some support.
They're not at the very center of the campus, either of them. But
right. So those are the loose ends, I guess, I wanted to share with you.
So you've been pretty satisfied at the way things have been going this year.
Oh, it's been a wonderful year, just an absolutely wonderful year. And, you know, the biggest problem for me has been finding enough hours in the day to get everything done that I want to get done. And that's why, you know, the addition of this wonderful cultural anthropologist as my special assistant is so important, because it's going to help me as well as the associate dean, you know, a lot. But it's been a wonderful year. It's been a very exciting year, and I'm not obviously as tense about being able to do the job. You know, having been here 11 months or so, you know, I have more confidence, and have had my ideas reaffirmed by, you know, many people, including the chancellor, in terms of, you know, the directions in which we're heading, and that's exciting. So I'm feel a little more secure, a little better anchored, you know, this year than I felt last year. But I've got lots and lots of plans for the year ahead.
Well, I'll just pursue that a bit. I would get back to the students, but how has it affected as the semester has worn on your have you made come to terms with your family life and your children? Is it was working out well, as I recall, and is it still, or is it?
It's still working out really well. I often wonder what life would be like if I had really small children in this job. You know, my youngest child will be 12 in November, and you know, I think it would be very, very hard to do this job with a really young family, but it's working out. My family is very proud of me, and they seem to be doing as much as they can to, you know, support and help me. They would like me to spend more time, you know, with them, and I plan to do that once I get things, you know, a little better organized, you know, here. But it's working out very well.
When do you come in, and when do you go home?
What I've been doing this summer is I come in always by 8 or a little bit before, and I go home about 6, and I'm still trying to preserve a family dinner, so I come home and I'm generally the dinner cook, and then after dinner I go upstairs, I have a little study, and I work on my mail, because it's very hard for me to get to my mail during the day. So Sunday through Thursday I generally do my mail, and then I work about a half day on Saturday.
Wait a sec. Okay.
So I've been working about a half day on Saturday. During the regular semester, it gets more complicated because I have a lot of evening, you know, commitments. And so there, you know, at least last year, there were a number of nights where, you know, I didn't get home until probably 8:30, 9:30. Again, I think that's temporary, in that, you know, we've made some hires, really good people that, you know, can go out to some of these night engagements. Ideally, I would like not to be out more than 2 nights, you know, a week during the academic year, you know, during the fall and spring semesters. So I guess I'm just repeating myself, but, you know, I think of this past year as having been unique in terms of writing
good
speeches
luck.
And doing all kinds of things. And I'm confident that eventually, not this year, but that eventually it's going to settle down a little bit more. And, you know, my goal is to have the campus be exposed to a much wider variety of people on our staff. You know, obviously there are lots of occasions when I need to be there myself, but my hope would be to show off the talent that I have on my staff. And, for instance, our new assistant dean, Elena Meyer, will be coming on board, and she's just excellent, and I would like people, you know, on the campus to get to know her. And, you know, my idea is I'll withdraw increasingly and expose people on my staff to the university community and get them used to dealing with different people on staff.
Do you have enough space for these people?
Mm-hmm. Thanks to the excellent work of Rose Barlett, who is our instructional space wizard, or our general space wizard for the university. She's been extremely helpful. And yes, we're making some moves, but we have space.
Mm-hmm. Well, it certainly doesn't sound as if you see much of your family, but if they don't mind, why, that's all right.
Mm-hmm. We're working it out.
The SOAR program, was that as successful as you hoped it would be? What were the problems in
it? The SOAR program went very well. We did add a brand new unit, a half-hour segment, in which, in the Dean of Students presentation, which we talked about multiculturalism and diversity on the one hand, and the underbelly of that, of course, being racism and sexism and all the other isms. And so that was brand new. And, you know, whenever you do anything for the first time, you know, it's not perfect. We had students helping with that unit, and it got pretty hard for the students because there definitely were some racist attitudes expressed by some of the students that, you know, our new students
incoming.
Coming in. There was some lack of appreciation for diversity, and so it was hard for the students that we hired. But, you know, on balance, we're glad that we did that. Our idea is that we get our multicultural hooks in the students, you know, early, and, you know, get them interested in, you know, having experiences in cultures different from their own and lifestyles and so forth. The other thing that we added was we added dinners for the parents and their sons and daughters. And the fire marshal actually was controlling how many people could get into the room because we had a tremendous response. People were bringing not only their sons and daughters, but their mothers and grandmothers and aunts and uncles. And so that was very successful. And this is a transitional year. We extended SOAR essentially by half a day, and next year it will be a full-blown two-day program. And again, I see orientation as an ongoing process that starts when a student writes for information about the university all the way through probably the end of the student's first year here. So I see it as a long process, and obviously SOAR is a key, you know, component of that process. But it, all in all, it went very well.
I suppose there are lengthy reports on it.
That'll
be interesting. The since we talked, I think that the WSA elections were held, and you have started meeting with the representatives.
That's right.
How important they got a new group in, and they were going to reform or try to solve the chaotic problems. How important is that to you? Who's in charge of WSA, and how are they doing?
Tremendously important, and we have probably two of the most progressive, talented student leaders that are heading WSA, the co-presidents, Noel Radomski and Margaret McCormick. They're the best student leaders that we've had probably in 10 years. They're just marvelous, and they are not interested in getting into an adversarial relationship with the university administration. They're interested in working together as a kind of from a shared governance perspective, and they're just excellent. I'm looking forward to a wonderful year with them. We, as you said, we've been meeting with them regularly. We just met with them last Friday, as a matter of fact. They also will be meeting periodically with the chancellor because she wants to stay in touch with them. Margaret McCormick is a Phi Beta Kappa person, so she's not only an outstanding leader and interested in life outside the classroom, she's an outstanding scholar and a real up-and-comer. Noel, real interesting tidbit of Noel's background. In his first year in college, his sister was a single parent, had a new baby, and Noel cared for that baby while his sister was in class. And he has a great interest in children and family issues, and they're just super people, right? So it makes a huge difference who is in the leadership positions in WSA, and I'm wishing already that their term of office was at least 2 years, or that they had some presidents-elect or something, mm-hmm. People of their same caliber. But hopefully they can start a tradition this year of responsible leadership and this attitude of working with the administration cooperatively, because it's going to advance their cause a lot faster than say being in an adversarial position with the administration.
Of course. Do you feel that you have to go to these meetings, or is that something you will turn over to your assistant dean?
I think at least for this year, the associate dean, Roger Howard, and myself will meet biweekly. Does that mean twice a month?
I'm never sure.
Twice a month. We will meet twice a month for an hour with them. But, over the long haul, I would see turning that responsibility, that liaison work with student government, to someone else. Also to give someone else the opportunity. You need to provide opportunities to your staff so that they can grow and develop. And, maybe we could take someone who's been on staff a long time who's never had that experience and have them work with student government or one of our new people. But it's very important to me to be in direct communication or have my staff be in direct communication with the student leadership in WSA. And, I mean, ideally, we have about 8% of our students that vote in the WSA elections. I would like WSA to have much more visibility, more credibility, and to have a huge chunk of, students out voting for their leaders and scrutinizing the backgrounds of their leaders and holding them accountable. So I hope that student government will improve itself in the years ahead and become much more visible.
It seems terribly random, the choice of leaders.
That's right.
Depending on the publicity that they put out. Yes, that's lucky. How important is the multicultural center? I know you've been involved in that in this talk.
Yes. In fact, that's a new project that the chancellor and the vice chancellor asked me to launch, and it's in my budget. And I named the acting director of the Multicultural Center at the end of June. It is, I believe, very important for minority students as well as majority students. I think it is the most visible, that is to students, it's the most visible part of the Madison plan. It's going to be open, you probably know this, on the second floor in the Memorial Union by registration week. It will have two purposes. It will serve a social purpose, a gathering place for minority as well as majority students. I mean, all students will be welcome, but it will be a social gathering place, and it will be a place where there will be academic programs held. For instance, bringing in somebody like Professor Takaki from Berkeley to talk about the history of Asian Americans in this country. So it will have, you know, two primary functions, and I think it's a terribly important program, as well as a symbol or a signal to the minority community. You know, look, you know, we have a Madison plan, and we, you know, we want you here, we welcome you here, and you're part of the mainstream. I mean, there isn't any more mainstream space than the second floor of the Memorial Union. You know, 20,000 people a day go through the Union. So I think it's very important, and I'm excited that we're opening it. And I think over the long haul, again, it's only going to work if we're able to get faculty and staff, you know, involved in the center.
You mean to be there?
To be coming in, doing programs.
Oh. I wonder if it will work. So there's nothing, you aren't going to have tables for people to sit and drink beer. It's purely a, what, couches and chairs?
I see it as a meeting place for minority student organizations.
Mm.
And I see the director, the acting director, working with the minority student organizations to strengthen them, to provide leadership opportunities for minority students, and to, you know, plan programs.
Mm-hmm.
So I see them as doing lots of different things, but it's not a strictly social place.
Not really social, in fact. Yeah, and the Red Gym, is that's definitely going through.
The Red Gym. Yeah. As far as I know, now there are a lot of ifs involved when you're talking about a state building project. But the chancellor has asked me, and an associate vice chancellor who hasn't been appointed yet, to form a committee, to co-chair a committee that will during this academic year meet and talk about how space in the Red Gym ought to be used for student services, including the Multicultural Center. Mm. So there's 50,000 square feet of space in the Red Gym, and there are a lot of student services, academics, student services, as well as dean students services. And so we'll have to hear from everybody. I'm sure that's going to be a very hot committee. We've already had a dozen people indicate that they want to be members, and we'll probably have some open hearings and again allow everybody an opportunity to be heard, and then give the chancellor a set of recommendations as to how the Red Gym ought to be used. This has to go. I mean, the Red Gym will have to be gutted. They'll have to start from the beginning, and I think we're talking about between $7 and $10 million in renovation costs. I myself love the Red Gym.
You know, my office is in the Red Gym.
Yes.
And I have the best office on the campus, I think.
Yes, I love the Red Gym, and I would oppose tearing it down. You know, and maybe because I study classics, I like things that are old, but I love the Red Gym. I love the way it looks, and I think it's ideal space for student services, and maybe even some kind of visitor center or welcome center where people coming to the campus could, you know, get information.
Mm-hmm.
I have big plans for the Red Gym, so I hope it all works out.
Well, you you said something at one point that you hope that the faculty would pay more attention to the Dean of Students Office and would understand its function better. Do you think that has happened?
I think it has happened a little bit already because of the chancellor and the chancellor's focus on student services. Also, because I've been so visible and out and around, and have made a point of talking with faculty, of letting faculty know that that I want to work with them and help them in any way I can. For instance, I've already gotten an invitation to speak to the math department faculty this
have
fall,
you?
Which is just super. Now, that started because I was giving a speech somewhere talking about how much, you know, I would like to get better connected with faculty. And I said, for instance, you know, I'm going to ask the math department if they would let me come over sometime for 5 or 10 minutes and talk to them, you know, briefly about the Dean of Students function. And that got back to somebody in the math department who called and said, we'd like you to come for an hour, not just five
Good.
Or 10 minutes. And so I think that a lot of it has to do with our, you know, talking with faculty and wangling invitations or making ourselves available. I think we'll try to send out a letter this fall to all faculty members, letting them know that we're available and that we would like very much to come to a departmental meeting or to, you know, talk with them in some way. Also, we need to get better connected with TAs. I haven't figured out exactly how to do that. I know I want to do that, but make some good connections with TAs. Mm. And maybe we'll start with the big departments like English and math and history, physics, chemistry, and try to make some good connections with the big departments that teach large numbers of freshmen. Since we're focusing on this orientation, maybe that would be a logical place, and then eventually get out to the smaller departments.
That'll be interesting. I've tried to imagine the history department listening to you talking. They might.
Mm-hmm.
I have to plant a seed somewhere.
Right. Let me say one more thing about that. Part of, maybe I said this before, I can't remember, but if you act like you're second class and you're not as important, then you get treated that way. Mm. You know, I will never be a faculty member. That's not my mission here or my responsibility, but I feel that what we're doing in student services is very important and complements the academic mission. And I think we need to, you know, hold our heads up in student services.
Yeah.
And you know, if we act that way, hopefully we'll be treated that way.
I mean, I think everybody agrees that it's a simply wonderful thing to get to help freshmen get started, and they should listen to you explain how it's been done. Have you any comments about the workings of the dean's meetings that you've been going to the meetings? Have you just?
Do I have any comments about the dean's meetings?
I mean, do you just any? Do you enjoy them? Are they? How does Donna Shalala run them?
Well, first of all, one of the most refreshing things about the chancellor is that she hates long meetings. So the dean's meetings are relatively short, somewhere between half hour and an hour. And she, you know, has an agenda, or Bernie Cohen has, you know, an agenda. And, you know, they get right to the point, and they, you know, they stay on target, and they get the issue discussed. And there's generally a fair amount of humor in the dean's meetings, which I love. Let me give you an example. Donna Shalala asked Leo Walsh from the College of Agricultural and Life Sciences what he was doing about the drought. And Leo, I'm not sure that Leo thought about what he was saying, but he, or maybe he did, he said, I've appointed a committee. And everybody just roared. It was absolutely hilarious.
Yes, that's great.
So she welcomes feedback, encourages feedback from the dean. She listens carefully to what they say because she knows that, you know, they are the key people in each of the different, you know, academic areas. And so the dean's meetings are going along fine.
Do you have the feeling that people are concerned about faculty governance more than they were, whether it's being honored?
You know, I don't know. I certainly hope that we will have some strong leadership, you know, in the university committee this coming year, and I know that the chancellor wants that. You know, but I don't know what the, you know, general reaction of the faculty is. I mean, clearly, the chancellor has exerted more leadership and sort of, you know, has sent out more ideas about what she would like to see happening on the campus than, you know, the previous chancellors, at least the ones that have been around while I'm here. And so, you know, she's exerting much more leadership, and it's up to the faculty to challenge some of those ideas if they don't like them, or, you know, I mean, basically this is a faculty governed institution, and I myself would vote for keeping it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But she's very strong and clear in her, you know, ideas, or sending out ideas.
Now, you said you hoped the university committee would exert some leadership, strong leadership this year. Does that affect you, how the university committee functions?
Well, for instance, let me give you an example. It worried me when the classroom disruptions occurred in Professor Shoib's class and Professor Hunter's class, that it was a couple of weeks before the university committee issued a statement, you know, about the classroom disruptions. And, you know, the core activity of the university is teaching. And that was disrupted, and I was outraged. I was very angry and sharpened my teeth in terms of trying to figure out who was responsible and to call these individuals to account. You know, I wished that the university committee would have held a press conference and issued a statement immediately. I don't know why they didn't do that. And so in that way, what the university committee does affects me. You know, not so much on a day-to-day basis, but certainly their view of academic misconduct and what kind of policy we ought to have. The academic misconduct policy comes from the faculty, you know, originates. Mm-hmm. We administer the academic dishonesty code, but certainly it's very important how the university committee reacts to the child care report, for instance. That will be very important to me, how they react to the alcohol task force. And again, you know, I want to, as much as I can, get connected with faculty.
Now, would you like to go and address the university committee?
I plan to go and see them.
You do?
Sit down and talk with them.
Did you think of calling anybody up at the time of the disruptions? And
well, it was so hectic. And actually, I did send word via a friend who knows one of the people on the university committee. Would they please take a look at this? But it was so hectic. There were just so many phone calls and reporters, and I had an enormous amount of contact with Professors Hunter and Shoib.
Mm-hmm.
An enormous amount, and they were extremely pleased with the way in which we handled the whole situation. I mean, I say that because they wrote the chancellor that we took such a strong view and a determined view to find the perpetrators and hang them.
Which, in fact, as you say, perhaps the university committee should have done.
Mm-hmm. I would like to have seen that.
Yes, it's time to go, yes. It is time for you to go.
Yeah,
well, thank you very much.
Yeah. So much fun.